Welcome to Unreal, a podcast about Irish history, stories, and tradition. There once was born a cursed girl. She was beautiful and strong-willed, and would do anything for the man she loved. But in her name, evil came to Ireland, bringing war and fighting that left hundreds dead in its wake. Her name was Deirdre, and the stories told about her live on as one of Ireland's most sorrowful legends. I'm Ruth Atkins, and this is Unreal. Deirdre of the Sorrows is one of Ireland's best-known legends, and the last of the three sorrows of storytelling that I have been covering. You can listen to my previous episodes on the Children of Lir and the Quest of the Sons of Chirin if you want to hear the others. I think I have shared before that the three tales were only grouped together as the Three Sorrows at quite a late date, probably sometime in the 18th century. And because of this, they don't have quite as much in common as you might expect, other than their tragic endings. Deirdre of the Sorrows stands out particularly as being quite different to the other two. Instead of telling of people from the Tuatha De Danann, or Tribe of the Gods, as the other tales do, this story takes place among the Milesians, the ordinary people of Ulster who came afterward. And, while the Children of Lir and the Sons of Chirin focus on families who met terrible fates, this tale is always, first and foremost, Deirdre's story, beginning with her birth and ending with her death, and telling of the grief and destruction that her name and beauty wrought throughout Ulster. Deirdre's terrifying destiny was foretold even before she was born. Long ago in Ireland, the men of Ulster were in the house of King Conor's storyteller, Felimid MacDall, and his wife was serving them drink and food. As she walked across the room, the infant in her womb began to scream. A long, loud scream that was heard throughout the whole house, so that each of the Ulster warriors rose in fright and stood side by side watching. The woman was brought to the druid and seer Cuthbert, who examined her. "In your womb there cries out a woman of yellow hair with yellow curls," he said. "A woman for whom there will be many slaughters among the chariot fighters of Ulster. A woman, fair, tall, and long-haired, concerning whom champions will fight, concerning whom high kings will ask. Her name will be Deirdre, and concerning her there will be evil." When the child was born, it was indeed a girl, and the warriors were concerned about Cuthbert's prophecy. "Let the girl be slain," they called. But King Conor wouldn't allow it. "No," he said. I shall carry the girl off tomorrow, and she will be reared according to my will, and she will be my wife. I shall nurse her in a silent place, a lonely wrath within a lonely land, where none shall ever gain a sight of her, nor ever wish to see her. The men of Ulster did not dare to speak out against their king, and so it was done. Deirdre was hidden away, and raised in secret to become Conor's wife. And though she grew to be the most beautiful woman in Ireland, no person ever laid eyes on her, except her foster parents and an old woman called Lauracum. Lauracum is a really fascinating character, although she only has quite a small role to play in the story. Even her name is interesting. Lauracum possibly comes from two Irish words, meaning crooked book. And it's told in the story that even though all the rest of Ulster could not come to see Deirdre, Lauracum could not be kept away because she was a female satirist. In medieval Ireland, people believed that poetry held great power, and bards could use their skills to curse as well as praise. Satirical poems were sometimes recorded as causing blemishes and blisters on the people they targeted. Sometimes they even led to their death. So, old and crooked though she may have been, Lauracum would nonetheless have had great power, feared and respected by the people of Ulster as someone of high magic, who could do and go where she wished. The people of Ulster soon forgot about Deirdre and the prophecy that Cathbad had made. But prophecies do not fade, even when they are forgotten. And the terrible fate that was promised was growing, even as Deirdre grew, alone and seen by no one. One winter morning, when Deirdre was grown, she stepped outside to see her foster father skinning a calf on the snowy ground. The calf's scarlet blood dripped down onto the snow, and a black raven flew down from the trees to drink it. Deirdre was mesmerized by the sight. She spoke to Lauracum, saying, "The only man I could love would have these three colors. His hair as black as the raven, his cheeks red like the blood, and his body as white as snow." Lauracum smiled. "Yes, such a man, my lovely child, there is, and only one. Go search from sea to sea, and such another you shall never find as Nisha, son of Usna." "I shall not be well until I see him," said Deirdre. It happened one day soon afterward that Nisha and his brothers, the sons of Usna, were nearby. The sons of Usna were famous warriors, known for their swiftness, bravery, and the sweetness of their singing. As Nisha stood away from his brothers, Deirdre crept out from her fort and walked past so that he would see her. "Beautiful is the heifer that goes past us," Nisha said to himself. Deirdre turned. "There must be heifers in a place where there are no bulls," she answered suggestively. "But you have the bull of the province," countered Nisha. "Conor, the king of Ulster." "Ah," said Deirdre, but if I had a choice, I would choose a young bull like thee." Now, Naoise may have been tempted by this, for Deirdre was beautiful, but he did not show it. He knew of the prophecy of Cathbad, and he did not want to go against the king. "Are you refusing me?" said Deirdre. Then she rushed towards him and caught hold of the ears on either side of his head. "Here are the ears of cowardice and disgrace," she said, "if you will not take me." Deirdre was appealing to Naoise's sense of chivalry and honour here, knowing that a warrior could not lightly take a charge of disgrace. Naoise cried out, and his brothers came running to help him. Naoise told them what had happened. "Evil will come of this," the sons of Usna said, "but you will not be in disgrace as long as we live. We will take you and Deirdre out of Ireland, for there is now not a king in this land who would give us welcome." What is really surprising in these early versions of the story is how bold Deirdre is about getting what she wants. In a lot of the more modern versions of the tale, storytellers make Deirdre more passive and shy, a fittingly pure romantic heroine, and they show her and Naoise's love growing naturally together. But in the early versions, Deirdre shows herself to be more than a match for these noble warriors, clever and shrewd, and willing to do anything to get the fate and the hero that she wants. She's actually so forward that you almost wonder whether Naoise is truly a willing lover. This is actually quite common in elopement stories from medieval Ireland and further afield. In the famous pursuit of Diarmaid and Gráinne, and the story of Cano MacGartnan and his lover Cred, the married female lover gives a sleeping potion to all the people at court, so that she can entice the male hero to set aside his loyalties to his leader and take her for himself. These tales, like Deirdre's, tend to end tragically. And perhaps it is a warning to men of the dangers of women, reminding them not to follow the whims of a woman who knows her own heart and is willing to do anything to get what she wants. There is even an interesting story that shows what happens to a man who tries to refuse such a woman. Ronan was king over Leinster, and his first wife, Eithne, bore him a handsome son, whose name was Maol Fuartaigh. When Eithne died, Ronan decided to marry again, to a fair young maiden from the north. "Truly, you are too old for a girl wife," his son Maol Fuartaigh said. "Will you not marry an older woman? That would fit you better than a little skittish thing of a girl." But Ronan would not be deterred. He brought the maiden down to his home in Leinster. But the girl and her father had a plan for a much greater catch. "Where is your son, Ronan?" his new wife asked. "I am told you have a good son." "I have indeed," said Ronan, "the best son in Leinster." "Then let him be summoned to me," his young wife said. Through some fairly elaborate trickery, the young bride tried her best to seduce her new husband's son, but Maol Fuartaigh would not yield. "If I were thrust into a fiery pit that would make ashes and dust of me 3 times, I would never meet with the wife of Ronan," he said. "I will leave this place to avoid her." So Maelfarhartig fled to Scotland. But while he was gone, the men of Leinster rose up against his father, and Maelfarhartig was forced to return home to help him. His grateful father, Ronan, could talk of little else but what a wonderful son he had in Maelfarhartig. "You have made us deaf talking about your son," said his wife, "and he is not so good as you think. He has tried to seduce me 3 times since this morning, and I shall not be alive withstanding him much longer." At first, Ronan refused to believe her. But eventually, she convinced him of Maelfarhartig's betrayal. There was a warrior by Ronan's side, Aidan, son of Fiacna. "Oh, Aidan," said Ronan, "a spear into Maelfarhartig." And when Maelfarhartig had turned his back to them by the fire, Aidan thrust the spear into him. With his dying breath, Maelfarhartig told his father the truth of what had happened. "Your wife has been soliciting me since she came into this land," he said. "It was not 3 times today that I had her brought to me, but 3 times today that she came to me herself, and I turned her away." In anguish and rage at his wife's trickery and the death of his beloved son, Ronan rose up and he ordered his wife's whole family to be killed. His warriors killed her father, mother, and brother, and brought their heads back, throwing them on the woman's chest. Then the young bride rose and threw herself onto her knife, so that it came out through her back. The story of how Ronan slew his son is definitely told in a less tragic way than Deirdre of the Sorrows or other Irish elopement tales. Although it ends in death and destruction, it's actually told in a much more light-hearted way, reading a little bit like a comedy in places. And perhaps there's some humour to be found in the early tales of Deirdre too, in how cleverly she bested one of the greatest warriors in Ireland with her words alone. It does make it a much more complicated story, though, raising questions of propriety and consent that we still grapple with to this day. And so, it makes sense that the later versions of this story have gone for a simpler, more romantic description of their love. That Naois was so bewitched by Deirdre's beauty that he could never have done anything but fall in love with her. He forgot himself, forgot the world, forgot the king whose heavy-handed wrath no man had ever known to seize. But Naois now forgot it, and forgot himself and death and life, and answered her. Together with the sons of Usna, Naois and Deirdre fled. They journeyed throughout Ireland, evading King Conor's forces, and finally they made their way abroad and took shelter with the King of Scotland. The sons of Usna joined the Scottish King's army and hid Deirdre in a house in the castle grounds. But early one morning, the steward of the King of Scotland spied Naois and Deirdre asleep and hurried back to tell the king of what he had seen. "I have never seen," he said, "a woman equal to you until this day. But Naois, son of Usna, has a woman worthy of the king of the western world. We should kill him, and his wife should share your bed," the steward said. "No, I will not kill him," the king said, "but you should go to her every day to woo her secretly to my side." The steward did so, going to Deirdre each day and singing the praises of the King of Scotland to her, hoping to entice her to leave Naois for him. But it did no good. Deirdre was fiercely loyal to Naois, and every night she told him what the steward had said to her and made sure that there were no secrets between them. Before long, the King of Scotland grew angry at being refused, sending the sons of Usna into ever more dangerous quests and battles. But they were so strong and brave that they always survived. So at last, the king assembled his army and prepared to ambush Naois and his brothers and take Deirdre by force. But Deirdre heard of this too, and she warned them. "Leave now," she said, "for if you do not leave tonight, tomorrow he will have you slain." Naois and his brothers fled again to an island of the sea. Now, while all this was happening in Scotland, King Conor and his followers were still brooding in anger over Deirdre and Naois's betrayal. In some later versions of the story told in the 19th century, Conor sends Lauercombe to spy on Deirdre and to tell him if she was still as beautiful as she had been in her youth. Lauercombe goes dutifully, but she loves Deirdre and Naois, and so she tells Conor that Deirdre's beauty has faded and she was no longer worthy to be a king's bride. But Conor is suspicious and sends another messenger who reports the truth, that Deirdre is as beautiful, if not more beautiful, than ever. "It's a pity, O'Connor," said the men of Ulster, "that the sons of Usna should die in the land of foes for the sake of one evil woman. It is better that they should die here, under your watch." "Let them come to us, then," said Connor. He called on Naois and the sons of Usna and invited them back to Ireland, even telling them that they could bring fellow warriors with them for security. The man Naois brought with him was Fergus MacRoch, a mighty warrior. In the earliest version of the story, the sons of Usna return because of Conor's invitation. But some later tales take a more romantic approach, saying they decide to go back to Ireland because they hear a voice calling out to them from across the waves. And in some versions of the story, Deirdre dreams that the trip will end tragically and begs Naois not to go. "Oh, Naois, go not forward, for I see a cloud upon the sky, a cloud of blood. It streaks the heavens with a tinge of red. It casts an ice-cold shadow over me." But Naois ignores her warning and leaves her, going with Fergus and his brothers, trusting in Conor, and not knowing that the king had further trickery up his sleeve. Now Naois and the sons of Usna were sworn not to eat in Ireland until they had eaten at King Conor's table first. So Conor set up a trap to separate them from Fergus. He had the Ulster men invite Fergus to a feast, and because Fergus could not honourably refuse, he had to leave Naois and his brothers, sending his son Fiacna with them in his place. They reached Conor's fort in the meadows of Avon Vaca, standing on the high ground while the women of the fort watched from the ramparts. Then King Conor's ally, Owen, son of Durhacht, came forward with his warriors to greet them. Owen thrust his spear forward, and though young Fiacca threw himself over Nisha, the spear pierced them both, and they fell to the ground. Then a great battle began, and the sons of Usna were slaughtered in the meadow, with no man escaping alive. Though Nisha and his brothers were dead, the fighting in the story did not end there. Fergus, when he heard what had happened, rushed to Avon Vaca, and with his warriors slew the Ulster men and women, and set the whole fort on fire. Then Fergus left in exile to join Queen Maeve of Connacht, and this actually sets up the beginning of another very famous Irish legend, called the Tán Bó Cúalnge, or the Cattle Raid of Cooley. When all this had been done, King Conor ordered that Deirdre be brought to him. She was taken to his side, with her hands bound behind her back, and placed under his power. Again, the more romantic later stories paint a simpler picture of Deirdre, saying she died of a broken heart when she heard of her lover's death. But in the early version, she dies later, and very much on her own terms. For one whole year, Deirdre lived on in Conor's household, and during that time, she never smiled, and rarely ate or slept, keeping her head bowed. But when music played, she would lift her voice and sing of her grief for Nisha. For this it is, no more I sleep, no more my nails with pink I stain, no joy can break the watch I keep, for Usna's sons come not again. Break not, O King, my heart today in me, for soon, though young, I come my grave unto. My grief is stronger than the strength of sea. Thou, Conor, knowest well my word is true. After a year of hearing it, King Conor grew tired of Deirdre's melancholy and sought to punish her. What person do you hate the most? He asked her. You, she answered, and Owen MacDurhacht, who slew my Nisha. Then I will give you to Owen for a year, said Conor. The following day, they went together in the chariot to the assembly at Maca. Deirdre and these two men that she hated most in the world. She looked from one to the other, and Conor laughed. Ha, Deirdre, he said, you are looking at us like a doe caught between two rams. This teasing was the final straw. There was a great rock of stone in front of them, and Deirdre tore herself away, threw herself from the chariot. Her head struck against the stone and shattered her skull, and so she died. She fell into the grave where Nisha lay and slept. There, at his side, the child of Phelim fell, the fair-haired daughter of a hundred smiles. Men piled their grave, and reared their stone on high, and wrote their names in Ulm. These were the debts for which the child unborn had cause to curse King Conor. This the blood that swelled into a sea and overflowed the pleasant plains of Ulster. 'Twas for this Emania fell, with all her palaces. It was for this the fair red branch was hewn, from off the tree of Ulster, fruit and leaves. Thus far the fate of Usna's sons. Thus far. There are many different ways that you can tell a story, and more than one way to bring a heroine to life. You can describe her purity and goodness. You can speak of her cleverness and determination to live by her own wishes rather than trace a path set out for her by others. You can tell of the strength of her love, her fierce loyalty to the man she prized above all others. Deirdre was all of these things, and depending on which story you hear, different qualities will take center stage. And perhaps this is why her story has captured so many people's hearts and imaginations, living on through the centuries, right up until this day. Her story, her character, becomes what you want it to be, perhaps revealing more about the people who tell the story than it does about Deirdre herself. One thing is always certain, though. Maiden or temptress, stubborn, headstrong or loyal, her death is always a tragedy, bringing forth a sorrow that echoes through the ages. Thanks for listening to this episode of Unreal. You can find links to the sources, script, and music from today's episode on my website, unrealpodcast.com. A quick note that I appeared on another podcast called Let's Talk About the Arts recently, reading a piece of fiction I wrote for the magazine Sonder. The story was inspired by folktales, so if you'd like to hear it, you can find a link to that episode on my website or in the show notes too. And do consider picking up a copy of the wonderful Sonder magazine as well. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support the show, please consider reviewing and subscribing wherever you get your podcast, liking the show on social media, or telling a friend. I'll be back soon with another story, and until then, Gunairi on Bohirlat.